Welcome to the Sunday night There is a Solution newcomer and returning members meeting of Overeaters Anonymous. This meeting is being recorded, so you may visit our website at oaontario.org, where you'll find this audio recording, additional podcasts, and a place to donate to keep this special service active. The opinions expressed are those of individual OA members and do not represent OA as a whole. Our speaker today is a compulsive overeater, a member who has at least 6 months of abstinence, has recovered through the directions in the Big Book, and maintains recovery on a daily basis. After the share, there will be time to make a comment or ask a question about the OA program or what the speaker has shared. So welcome Nancy C., a compulsive overeater from Michigan. Nancy, you're
muted,
muted.
Nancy.
All right. Hey, let me try this again. Good evening. This is Nancy C., gratefully recovered from compulsive overeating in this shameless, awful way of mind and body that takes me to places I don't want to go to if I don't stay in fit spiritual condition. Is anybody, you don't have to raise your hands, but hopefully there is somebody today that is new to the program or relatively new or struggling or thinking of taking a foot out or maybe playing around with some certain things and not sure where they are. I've done all of that. And so hopefully somewhere in my share, something will resonate with you because I truly am a compulsive overeater of the hopeless variety. And there's only one solution for me. My common problem with all of you is that I don't treat food normally. I don't think about food normally. I don't touch and have behaviors around food normally. But there is one common solution, and that's the steps of OA and AA recovery that takes me to a spiritual place that really does solve all my problems because I really don't have a food problem. I have a living problem. I have a spiritual malady that I have all my life thought that I just didn't have really good willpower, that I didn't know how to control my eating. If I could just finally get the right diet, get the enough stamina together to get the food off, to get the weight off and stop eating the food, I would be all right. But that's really a lie because I wanted to get the weight off without stopping eating the food. Just give me the results and I don't want to do anything else. So I do believe, as it says in the doctor's opinion, that I'm a distinct entity, that I do not treat food normally and that I'm not like normal people. You know, I was at a luncheon today where I brought my weight and measured food, and there was a scale available because it was at a fellow's house. But I watched people eat all sorts of chocolate and I don't know if I can mention food, sorry. All sorts of things that are not on my food plan and some at very high levels. And it didn't bother me, but it did make me say a prayer of just thanksgiving that I don't eat like that anymore. And I don't look around the room to see if somebody sees that I take another piece off the middle of the plate, because I notice those kind of things in other people because that's my malady, right? I want to know what everyone's eating, how much they're eating, where they're eating. Today, that doesn't bother me so much, but I am aware of people, especially if I think that they may have the same condition that I have. So let me qualify myself real quickly. I have been in 12-step recovery rooms since 1984. I have 40 years of recovery from alcohol and substance abuse. And I have been in the OA rooms since 2011. So 13 years of OA 12-step work. I didn't really find recovery till I found Big Book recovery. And today I've got 26 months of entire abstinence. So you can do the math. It took me a long time sitting in these rooms to be able to find recovery the way that it was taught to me through the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. So, you know, what about me? Let me also tell you that I have a home group. I have two home groups. I have a virtual home group, which is a Saturday morning meeting called Language of the Heart. And then I have an in-person meeting home group because I feel it's important to really bring recovery back to faces and places in my community. So I do have a home group that's Thursday night, Big Book Recovery. And I have a sponsor. I sponsor many people. My sponsees sponsor people. So I am truly working this program to the best of my ability on a daily basis. You know, why am I a compulsive overeater? I have no clue. You know, I did go through a period in my life that if I could just figure this out, if I could get the right diet, if I could get the right type of food to eat, if I just took out this food group or added this food group or ate less of this or only ate one time a day, I did all of that stuff. Acupuncture, pills, potions, special diets, diet pills. None of that stuff worked because there was always an end, right? It was always, I'm going to start something with an end in sight. And my favorite thing was Lent. We just finished, for people who are Catholic or Christian, you know, they went through Lent. And usually in the Catholic world, you give up something or you give up things for Lent. I would always give up sugar. And when my 40 days was up for Easter Vigil, I would have everything I gave up lined up on the kitchen counter, ready to come home to eat. And boy, did I eat and I ate and I ate till all of that stuff was gone because I had done it. I had done the abstaining for 40 days and there was my reward. And that worked for all my pain ways. I'd get to my desired weight and then I could start eating again. I understand today that that eating again is really, if I understand the doctor's opinion, my problem is I'm allergic to certain substances, and mine happens to be mostly sugar. And when I get sugar in any way, shape, or form, real or imagined or artificial in my body, I'm off to the races. So like when I would finish my fast for Lent and I would start eating cookies and things, boom, I couldn't stop. It was like a cannon shot out that even if I wanted to, I just couldn't. I just had to keep putting the stuff in my mouth, and I had no other solution. And I'm like, why am I doing this? I did 40 days without doing this and I can't stop. And that's because I have a physical malady and I am allergic to certain substances. And once they get into my body, I can't stop. I have to have more. My body craves more. And if I happen to get lucky enough and keep that food down for a couple of days, my insanity, my little Norman, I call it my little Norman on my shoulder starts going, oh, you can just have a little bit. Oh, it's just one bite. Don't worry about it. You can just eat this very easily. And I know you want it. Nobody will know. You can hide it, throw away the wrappers, whatever it is. My mind just takes over. So I have it again. So I'm in this double whammy. I can't live without having the sugar in me. And I can't live not having the sugar in me. So what do I do? The Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous tells me that I can take steps to replace that insanity that's in my head by finding a power outside of myself that will solve all my problems. Solve all my problems, not just solve my eating problems, solve all my problems. Because this is one little compulsive overeater that had a lot of problems. I had a problem of just plain living. And I apologize for the dogs. There's probably a squirrel out front. You know, I grew up in an Irish Catholic Italian family of six in the middle, and I always felt like I was lost. I always felt like I missed something. I didn't get the instructions. You know, people talk about that all along. I had a nervous disposition, like it says in every story in the Big Book, that something was not right. But I also knew, you know, don't ask, children are to be seen and not heard. So I didn't ever say anything, didn't know who to ask for instructions, but boy, I didn't know how I was supposed to behave. So I became a attention-seeking missile. I mean, you want to talk about a people pleaser. I was an attention sucker. I took all the air out of all the room just to get noticed because I was so afraid that I was going to just disappear or do the wrong thing if I just acted out or, you know, just made jokes and got myself in trouble, I would get attention. It would be for the wrong reason, but I would get the attention nonetheless. So my story growing up is nothing different than anybody else sitting in this room. You know, the names of the people I associated with, the schools I went to and stuff are different. But I think everyone can probably relate to the feeling of food solved all my problems. Food was my best friend. That was my only friend. I mean, I had acquaintances, but they all made fun of me, right? Hey, chubby catcher. Oh, look at that fat stripe on your swimming suit that came down the middle of my stomach. We had a stripe for our team, and my stripe kind of got a little big around the belly. Get made fun of that. I would rip my pants or have holes in between my legs from them rubbing together and wearing out. And then the chafed legs, I don't know if anybody had chafed thighs, the buttons that wouldn't button, and then they would finally button, and you'd go to sit down and the button would pop off. The change of seasons when you were like, oh my God, is anything going to fit in my closet? What am I going to do? Well, I'll put these away because I'm going to lose the weight that I gained. And, you know, all of that insanity of just thinking I had to keep catching up and I had to keep hiding. I had to keep figuring this out. And the only thing that made me feel better, when that button would pop, I would be so embarrassed. And what did I do? I reached for something sweet to go. Tomorrow, I'll start tomorrow. And tomorrow would come and I would be in the same situation. Then it would be a zipper that wouldn't go up, or it would be, you know, a pair of pants I'd put on that I can't get up my legs. And then you'd have to go out in public feeling like, you know, you were stuffed into something and knew everyone was looking at you. Now, I know today people are not really looking, unless they've got some reason or their own insecurities to look at other people, but I'm not that important. There's the crux. I am not the most important person in the room, but I like to think I am, and I like to think everything is about me and everything. Everyone's looking at me, and everyone is thinking bad things about me. So that's another thing that I had growing up through my whole life till I found recovery, and that's negative self-talk. I hated myself. You know, I would get it from the bullying and the comments that were made. And so I would start going, oh, that was so stupid. Oh, you're such an idiot. You know, people aren't going to like you. I mean, all the negative chatter of just like, you're no good. You're never going to fit. Your parents don't love you. Whatever it was, I just kept telling myself those things and reinforcing. And what you tell yourself, you start believing, right? And that, you know, went through all the way through my career, college and high school. Again, an overachiever because I always had to stay ahead of the game, or people would find out I had no clue what I was doing, right? As soon as somebody found out that I was a fake and I was just, now I was very accomplished, mind you. So all that are lies in my head because I did, you know, I was very successful in college and in my career, but I always thought I was a phony and somebody was going to find out. And when they found out, oh my God, the wheels were going to come off the wagon. And again, the only thing that would make me feel good was being in altered states. You know, I said that I was a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. That got my sugar in me quicker. I really think I took a hard left and started drinking my sugar. But the point is that it was altered states. As long as I didn't have to be in a normal state and could just be a little bit buzzed and out of sorts of things, I didn't have to really face any type of reality. And when I got sober in 1984, I immediately went back to food. I used to alternate between food and drinking and, you know, going from one to the other, but never being without anything that would alter my chemistry. But I really got into the food heavily when I quit drinking and the weight started to go on. I had a very successful career and I was known in the company for walking around. I rose in the corporate ladder again because good was never good enough for me. I always wanted more. This is a disease of more. Whatever I got, it wasn't good enough. You know, you'd get to a certain level in the company and think you had arrived. That was good for about 5 minutes. And then I wanted more. I wanted the next title and the next office and the next trip around the world. I wanted all of that stuff, and it was never enough. I was thinking about sitting in a executive meeting once where we were changing phone companies. I know this is going to sound really stupid, but this is, I got a new phone every time a new phone came out. It would be like, oh, I have to have this phone. And they'd be like, well, you just got one 2 months ago. I was like, well, this has got this, and I've got international calling, and I need to be able to Skype and do this other stuff. And I think I burned through like six different phones in a 2 year period, totally not necessary, but I could command it because of my position and nobody would question it. So I wasted money like that, but it was like I could prove nobody could stop me, and I always had to have the best thing. So I bullied my way through a career, and I hired very, very appropriately people who are very smart underneath me, treated them terribly because they gave me what I needed, and if they didn't and I looked bad, it was their fault. It wasn't mine. Long story short, I was known as being the one vice president who would walk around the company and check in on people. I worked in a large corporation, international group that had a laboratory and had customer service and stuff. I wasn't checking on what was going on. I was at the candy dishes. I knew who had what, in what days donuts came in, where and where. I would walk around and spend all morning long just grazing. Candy dishes, and people thought that I was checking in to find out what was going on with my business unit. I also would come into the office at 4 o'clock in the morning. Boy, am I a good employee. So I could talk to international offices on their time rather than making them stay up and talk when our day started. But I didn't do that. As I walked in the door, I would pick up candy as I got to my office because I knew where all that was. And I would sit there and immediately start eating and talking to people and be buzzed. I mean, literally, there is a buzz when I eat a lot of candy. And I feel sorry for, I wonder what the custodian, the person who cleaned the offices would say about my trash can, because it was just full of candy and wrappers and Lord knows what. And I never thought that that was really kind of unusual. It was normal to me, and I didn't see anything wrong with it till I started to hear everyone else's story and understood that I had a problem. I ate my way out of a job because that walking around and complaining to people when I would sit and eat candy and talk to different people about how, well, this person isn't doing the right thing, that business unit isn't performing, and it's this person's reason. I talked my way right out of a job, and I didn't take an early. They gave me an early severance package. And in 2011, I was escorted out the building and I was devastated. I was 55 years old and had no clue what I was going to do because my whole life was that job. I was associated by, you know, what I had accomplished, where I had been known. And I didn't have any other friends outside because my job was my business and I was totally lost. And a therapist told me maybe I should go to Overeaters Anonymous. And I was like, are you kidding? There is such a beast. And she was like, yeah, I think you should try it out. I said, I don't have a problem. She goes, what about when you don't eat sugar for Lent and you're like a different person, and then you're back right back at it and gain all your weight back? And so I said, all right, I'll go. So I did the proverbial. I go into my first meeting and nobody's there. And I'm like, yes. And I get up to leave and somebody walks in as I'm walking out the door. And she goes, were you here for an Overeaters Anonymous meeting? And I'm like, yeah. So she 12-stepped me and she told me, you know, she had a problem with eating. And I said, I have no idea what to eat. She told me to get a nutritionist, gave me the name of somebody. I got a great weight and measure food plan. And discovered that if I exercise, I can lose weight like there's no tomorrow. So My first bout with Overeaters Anonymous was really a weighed and measured plan that was given to me by a nutritionist and a exercise program, and I did nothing else. I mean, I had a sponsor and I would commit my food every day, and that was about it. I'd show up at meetings, but I lost 65 pounds in a year. I had arrived, man. All of a sudden, I had all that attention back of, oh my God, you look great. How did you do it? Blah, 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 blah. Until that stopped. And as soon as that stopped, what does somebody who's got a malady, a spiritual malady, I'm not getting the attention. I start eating a little bit here and a little bit there. And 8 years later and 65 pounds back on this body, I was hopeless and I was just devastated. And OA did not work. I told then a different therapist, I'm not doing OA anymore. The one thing I did right in those 8 years is I kept going to meetings, and I'd go for a couple of months and then go, oh, I broke my abstinence. And I'd get told, oh, keep coming back. It's progress, not perfection. And I just kept living like that. And not that anyone was going to call me on it, but I just made my way showing up, eating my way, sitting in the rooms, not being abstinent, and not really paying attention to any steps except for reading them off the wall. In 2020, I am a COVID recoverer. When COVID started, I found a vision for you. And for the first time, I heard that I had a spiritual malady and that I had an allergic reaction to certain foods, and that only admitting that I was totally powerless and asking for a power outside myself would restore me to sanity. So I found a sponsor who had something I wanted. They were recovered. They worked a good program, and I would do anything to get recovered. And that person took me through the book. She took me shopping, or we virtually went through every label of anything I ate to make sure there was no sugar in the ingredients in any way, shape, or form. I did whatever she told me to do and got to a rearrangement of my personality and that spiritual, just amazing transformation through working the steps within about 6 weeks. And it was a feeling that I never wanted to lose. It was just, food was not a problem anymore. I didn't think about food anymore. Yeah, I thought about what I needed to eat for a day, but then I would be done with it. And I learned that I am not the most important person in the room, right? I am powerless over people, places, and things, and I can't manage anything. And I tried to fix, manage, and control people all my life and realized that I'm just have a purpose here, right? I am not the person that is going to change anybody or make them do what I want them to do, nor is that my place. My place is to be of maximum service to others. So I cleaned house. I did an honest inventory and gave that away and really worked on my character defects and did amends to the best of my ability. And then started, I'm going to call it step 9.5. I started to do step 10, 11, and 12. And I really liked talking in meetings. I really liked doing service. I really liked being asked to do things. I really liked sponsoring people. So I started to do all that stuff. And I call this phase, this my recovery here is really the two-step, because I started to show up at meetings and do a lot of service. And the service became all about serving Nancy and advancing my agenda. And I forgot about the service to other people. I started to get annoyed with sponsees. I was too busy to do 10 steps. Prayer and meditation, oh, I overslept, I'll catch it later, and then never would catch it. With that starting to creep into my spiritual program, I wasn't staying in fit spiritual condition. And so I started to work my program by committee, and I'd start asking people things like, do you really weigh and measure all your food? And I'd find people who'd go, well, you know, close is good enough. I'd be like, I like them. Close is good enough. I don't have to be exact on my measurements. Do you do nightly reviews? Well, you know, I'm usually too tired and sometimes I can't. Oh, I can do them when I want to do them. I don't have to do them. 10 steps. Do you write out your 10 steps? No, as long as you figure out what it is. All of this stuff, I started to, in my heart, I knew it was wrong, but I had people that will corroborate with me and say that this is okay. So I started to work a program by committee where I lost that whole connection to God. And I was advancing myself. I was just being out there and starting to really get funny with food. I knew that, I don't know if anybody has gotten to a food once they're abstinent, once they're recovered, that they know that's not right. And you keep dabbling around and do I really need to give it up? Is it really, well, I did that with a certain food, and I kind of work with my sponsor and was kind of truthful about what I was doing, but not totally. I was still picking at it. And on Super Bowl Sunday in 2023, I ended up eating a whole bunch of it. And I just said, I am done. I am done with this lying and cheating and squishy food and not doing the steps. So I found somebody that I went through the steps again with who had me teach them the steps. And that was a really neat way to kind of go through and re-solidify my step work. And today, my food is between me and my nutritionist. I do tell my sponsor what's going on, but I don't make any changes unless my nutritionist tells me. And I don't care or want to listen to what other people are eating because this is my spiritual gift from God of what I'm supposed to eat to nurture my body. And I treat my
5 minutes.
nutritionist that. Okay, thank you very much. I do steps 10, 11, and 12 religiously. I cannot live without doing a 10 step every day. I am on a 10 step train, and I know some people go, oh, they're so annoying. You have to do a 10 step every day and you have to come up with a time. That keeps me on safe ground, saying I really do review my day, and really, when I am disturbed, I need to take a look at myself and get rid of that because I'll start stepping out of the program if I don't stay bedded in what it tells me to do in the big book. And I do 11 step. I do morning prayer and meditation, and then I do my evening review and try to pause throughout the day. I believe that God is in the pause, and that the fourth dimension that we talk about in the big book is in that pause that gives me a chance to do a different behavior than what I did. Giving service, I give service freely now, and I give it for unity. I don't give it for Nancy. It's a way of giving what I've been so freely given. This program has given me a life back where now I really do love myself. That self-hatred, that negative self-talk has really turned into loving and kind. And when it's not, I have to stop myself and go, that's not true. You are a child of God. You are good just the way you are. And God made me exactly the way I am for a purpose. I don't know what that purpose is, but I know that I have to live freely and love what He's given me to work with if I'm going to be of any use to other people. My God growing up was the, God give me the pony, and I never got the pony. And I could only find him Sunday when I would go to church, and the holy smoke would go up, and I'd be like, oh, there's God. Okay. And then I'd be gone. And you know what I was thinking? I've been thinking a lot about, I don't have a day where I don't talk about my higher power that I choose to call God with anybody all day long. That comes up in a conversation. And growing up, we never talked about God. We would go to church, you'd do catechism, you'd do that stuff. But unless you were on your way to church or something, you never talked about God being present for anything, which I find really kind of weird. And I'm really glad that, my best friend now, my employer, my principal, and my father is with me all the time and loves me just as I am. I do get my direction if I listen every day. Some days the directions are clear, some days are not, but I know that if I keep sitting and waiting, those directions do come and they are clear, and I know when I need to move and I have to move. I can't ignore those things. I think that the whole unity, service, and recovery is important. The triangle around our program or around the chips we get. All three have to be done in earnest for me today to be able to feel that I'm happy, joyous, and free. You know, my life has not changed at all since coming into OA and finding recovery. And everything's changed because my perception of everything I do has changed. You know, I look at a glass as half full rather than half empty. And I know some people get annoyed with me because I'm usually always in a good mood and always upbeat. But I believe God has got, my days are good because I am on this side of the grass. I'm healthy. I have all my capabilities. I have a loving family. I've got life beyond its wildest dreams. This is a design for living that truly works if I stay open to listening to God's direction and work this program so that food stays in the background and that I am food neutral. All those promises come true for me. And rather than putting my hand on that hot stove, I recoil and turn and give service to other people. I can be in self-pity all I want, or I can turn around and do what it says in the big book and call somebody else and get out of that. That is something that has truly worked for me every day that I think that I don't have a program. Let me turn around and help somebody else. And I hope somebody heard something good for me or that resonated with them today and really appreciate the opportunity. And with that, I'll pass. Thanks.
Thank you so much for sharing your story, Nancy.